Hello, this is GT Radio. I'm Tino Magnetta, and welcome to our show. Today I'm so excited. I have a very, very special guest, Joe Nyakwanabi, and he is the CEO of Mille Lacs Capital Ventures that analyzes new opportunities for the Mille Lacs tribe and manages the existing ones. A number of years ago, he made a sizable investment and bought up quite a few hotel rooms in Minnesota. And that was a big venture, which turned out to be really great for the tribe and his people. But more than that, it's what his friends say about him. You know, this is a man that's accomplished so much, but they call him humble. They call him honest, a great role model, and a big idea guy. And Joe, I'm so happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Tino. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, no problem. You know, one of the things that I'm always interested in about, and you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, what's your show about? And, you know, it's about people. It's about their roots. It's about where they came from and how they became who they became, and their vision of what's going to be happening in the future. And this is so important in Native Nations. You and I have talked about this at a couple of conferences. So, Joe, I want you to describe a little bit to me, you know. Where do you get all that? You know, where are your roots? How do you remember building all these things that people respect you so well?
Oh, cool. First of all, I want to acknowledge my friends that you had talked to and used those kind words. I must be paying them well. Just kidding. But my background, really, I grew up kind of born and raised in the main district of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Reservation. And I was really, really fortunate to grow up in a really, really stable household. I had both of my parents kind of pushing me and setting a good example for me along the way. And I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, before we had casinos and before Grand Casino was ever even built. And so, you know, I remember the struggles that our family had just to make ends meet at that time. And I think we had somewhere around 80% unemployment rate at that time. So I quickly learned by watching them the value of working hard, of you know, keeping a good attitude and really kind of earning what you get. And both of my parents dedicated their lives and their careers to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. And as we grew up, that was sort of one of those things. That's kind of what my family's been doing for hundreds of years. You make yourself good at something, and then you utilize that to make the tribe and make the community better. So that was really ingrained early on, that's what we were kind of put here to do, and that's what we were expected to do. And both of my parents were in the health and human services field for the tribe. My mother was a nurse, and my dad was a chemical dependency counselor and director. And that didn't really health and human services didn't interest me. So I knew I had to find some sort of spot. And as I watched the casinos kind of grow as a kid, you know, that's sort of the one thing that really got my blood boiling a little bit, was how I might be able to someday make an impact there. And so
How old were you, Joe? How old were you when the casino was being built?
We opened Grand Casino Mille Lacs back in 1991. So I was 9 years old at the time.
Wow.
And I still think back to the early days of that casino, and I remember our health clinic was right in front of Grand Casino Mille Lacs, and you know what, I used to crawl up on the garbage cans behind the the health clinic, and I'd peek over the cinder block wall and look at the surveillance cameras, because I'd never seen a surveillance camera before. And I still think back to that moment as a kid, peeking over that wall and really looking at what was going on over there, and really listening to my uncles and my dad and my mom talk about how that was really changing the tribe and was really going to change our future. And it just got me going, you know, from 9 years old, you know, how important that was going to be. Nobody really knew at that time how important it was going to be, but you could always sense this kind of fevered pitch and excitement about what was going on at the casino, and that was something that I certainly wanted to be a part of as I grew up as a kid.
Joe, paint us a little picture. You told us it was 80% unemployment, which is like, I mean, people probably have never heard that before, you know. I mean, paint us a little picture of that transformation. What was it like before the casinos opened, and then what did the communities get when the casino started? Because I think that's important, and you were kind of like in the middle of all that growth. You saw that, and to you, mm-hmm. that spelled out opportunity, you know. So tell us a little bit, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't even know, you know, 80% unemployment. When we talk about 6% unemployment, we freak out. Paint us a little bit of a picture of that transformation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you have that much unemployment, it's a very impoverished situation. I mean, I think about some of the things that even my daughters today probably take for granted. You know, back then we didn't have the things that a community needs to survive and strive. You know, we didn't have a very robust school system. We didn't have community centers. We didn't have a very strong, even access to water. Housing was pretty poor. Roads. I mean, some of those things that you look around today when you go outside and you think that, wow, that stuff's just a given. Well, for us, back then, it really wasn't a given, and that's just the way we were raised. We didn't have food. We had the commods, and I remember when my mom and dad would walk in with a box of commods. We knew the value of that, and my mom was a wizard behind the stove. She knew how to make meals for 8 people. And we just kind of strung things together and got by. I mean, and that's, but that's how things were for several years of my life. And to the credit of the tribe and the credit of the chief at the time, Chief Marge Anderson, you know, she changed all that. She invested. She was really, really wise in how she deployed the distributions coming off of the casinos, and her first priority was to create infrastructure for the tribe. And so throughout the 90s, under Marge Anderson, we saw just an explosive growth of the community centers and schools and a new health clinic, and housing exploded, and a lot of times, you know, people were getting into home, you know, first generations where people could actually call a place their home, and those were just beautiful times. I mean, it was really, really fun to go through that, and I think a close second priority behind that was job creation, and I think Marge really cared about people and about people having pride in what they do. So she really ensured that there were jobs open for band members, and it was really kind of a cool era for the tribe, where, you know, people wanted to work, and people were getting things that they'd never had growing up, and we sort of kind of flourished at that time. Invested a lot in education. A lot of folks went back to school and started building a skill set, and that's really where the tribe invested in infrastructure, invested in people, and we saw a lot of growth. And the other thing it did is it created this environment where people that had moved away from our communities, so they either moved to Minneapolis or they moved somewhere else across the country, they were welcomed home, and they had a home to go back to. So we saw a lot of folks also come back to the communities, which was also kind of a special thing for the tribe at that time.
Yeah, just a major revolution and a major step for the generations to come, right?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of laid the groundwork for, instead of, you know, especially my generation, you know, the kids that grew up during that time, instead of worrying about whether or not we were going to have enough food to eat tomorrow, we could start worrying and thinking and dreaming about other things, like where, you know, what could we do for a career? You know, maybe, you know, we can go to college, and maybe we should go to college. But it just allowed us, it took a lot of that pressure and stress of making ends meet, and gave us all, afforded us the ability to think bigger and dream bigger than any generation before us.
Yeah, very, very, very special times, very special times. Joe, when did you, how did your involvement in the gaming start? What was your first, you know, taste of that? What did you do first at the casino?
The very first job I ever had at the casino was an internship. I was a marketing intern for the database promotions marketing department, and I fell in love from that moment forward with the gaming business. It was literally, my job was to go out on the floor and make noise and give away prizes and conduct the hot seat promotions and things like that. And, you know, I still think back to that era. It was really fun, but it also exposed me to a lot of the guests that we had on our floor and kind of the importance and value that they get out of the entertainment. You know, having the chance to just take a break from reality for an hour and have the chance to win and socialize and meet people. And I learned right away kind of what guests are looking for, why they like our product, why they like our brand. And that's kind of, you know, off of that internship, I really, that's what kind of propelled my career, propelled my my bachelor's degree is in marketing because of that internship and that opportunity that I had. But yeah, that was my first job, giving away $100 hot seat bonuses on the casino floor.
That must have been a lot of fun. And not only that, but I guess it was the first time that you'd had that kind of interaction with the people in your community. I mean, that must have been a huge thing for you at the time.
Yeah, no, it was really a lot of fun. And I think coming and I sort of got a big break after, you know, by being related to that particular part of the marketing department, that database department, because back in those days, casino marketing was a lot about there was a lot about rubbing shoulders and taking care of guests that were on the casino floor at that particular time. So it was really a service-oriented approach. And during that particular period of time, you know, Gary Loveman came out with his write-up in the Harvard Business Review on, you know, finding the diamond in the data mine. And all of a sudden, there was this huge focus on, instead of waiting for folks to come to the casino to take care of them, it was, why don't we find them in the data and try to incentivize them to visit at a more frequent pace. And me coming out of college, I think I was one of the only folks that knew how to manipulate and pull data and read data and tell a good story off of data. And I just stumbled in to this kind of cool era of casino marketing, and that really, really jump-started my love for the business and at that time.
What was it like, you know, for you to be like a first generation that actually had access to schooling and being able to go to college? What was that experience like for you?
It was scary. I think that's one of the, you know,
describe like when you first got there, what were the thoughts going through your head?
Initially the big moment for me in my college career was when I got really far off of the res. So I went to school at American University in Washington, D.C., and I remember kind of landing on campus there and just being completely deathly afraid of, because I was all alone. It was the first time in my life that I was alone, and I kind of had to fend for myself. But it was over, you know, by overcoming that fear and really just throwing myself into the mix. I think that, you know, the lessons I learned from the first few months of just living in a big city alone was, they're still with me today. You know, you got to be courageous, and you got to be willing to try, you know, try something new, and you got to get comfortable with being out of your comfort zone. And that's, I still utilize that today. If I feel like I'm getting too comfortable, then I know that I'm not doing what I should be doing. So I'm always looking to kind of innovate and make sure that we're not standing still, I guess.
Yeah. That's a big leap. And I'm sure there's a lot of people around the country, you know, in Native Nations that are going to or have experienced that. And those are good things to know. To get comfortable when you're uncomfortable, right? To kind of like adjust accordingly. And that's a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's probably the most important thing. You know, it's the thing that I instill in my kids today, but it's also things that I instill in my team. You know, change is the only constant, and just get used to it and embrace it.
When you got back from college, you went to work for the tribe again at the casino, was it?
Yeah, yep.
And what was your role then?
So I started out in database marketing manager was my first role. And that's where we kind of moved the entire approach of database marketing for Grand Casinos at that time. And then from there kind of elevated up into a player development role where I was running the Grand Casino Mille Lacs host department. And then just kind of kept moving up the ranks, corporate director, corporate VP. And that's really where most of my career's been, was in that side of the business.
And what drove you during this period? Where did this ambition come from? Was it because of all the progress that you lived through as a kid and you've seen this evolution? Is that what kept driving you to go to college? And then, you know, because these things, I'm sure there's other, you know, the next generation and also this generation, people are trying to do that and they're thinking and have all these questions. So what actually drove you? What kept you going like this?
I'm pretty competitive. I grew up playing sports, playing basketball, and I think what really drove me then and probably drives me now is just the fact I always want to be the best. I want my teams to be the best. So I think there's always been this competitive thing. I've also always kind of lived with this chip on my shoulder about I grew up in a pretty a non-native community that for a lot of times looked down upon the native community, and I think that was always a big driver. I always felt like I was trying to prove somebody wrong, and I think you know, to some extent that's probably not that healthy, but in some ways that is just the literal thing that drove me. I was always trying to beat people. I was trying to beat them on, whether it was the basketball court or the classroom, I was always trying to prove that we were, not only were we just as good, but we were much better than most people.
Yeah, but that's a good point, because when you win, race doesn't become an issue anymore, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think
it kind of like sheds the skin of that a little bit, if you're a winner, because that's what people in the USA, they love winners. So, I mean, in a sense, that's kind of good advice, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think just in anything you can put on yourself that makes you hungrier than the next person, you should do that. For me, it happened to be that. You know, for other people, it could be something else. But as long as something's got to make you hungry to work harder, work smarter, increase the value that you bring to the table. And if you're not hungry to do that, then you know, you're probably not going to be that successful.
Okay, so now let's get to probably what everybody wants to hear. How did your vision for the hotel acquisition, how did that all come about for you?
That one, was really driven by the vision of the tribe, really. I mean, back in the day, the Art Gabo, the great chief of the Mille Lacs band that brought Grand Casino to the tribe, his vision was always that gaming wasn't the end. Gaming was just a means to get ahead. And he never envisioned that the tribe would forever be dependent on gaming. And he wanted us, and he called for future generations to figure out how to use this to propel the tribe into many more generations into the future. So I just really picked up on that. And the big impetus for our non-gaming activity and the success that we've had in the past 5 years with our non-gaming activity has been driven by the fact that our market here, the St. Paul region, is flat to declining. If we're sort of the oldest and most established gaming compacts in the whole country. I think you probably saw the recent NIGC numbers that just came out. I think the country is growing at somewhere around 5.5%. You have big newer players like the Sacramento region that are growing at 6.5%. You have Oklahoma that's growing at 5 or 5 and some change. Well, our region, we grew at 1.1%. And we've had, in the past several years, we've had consecutive years of decline in our gaming region. So the market here in Minnesota is very mature. And at the same time, for us, our tribe is growing at 2.6% every single year. So the growth of the tribe and the population of the tribe, and therefore the needs of the tribe, are really outpacing the growth rate of the gaming business. So that's what, I mean, that's kind of the situational analysis in a nutshell. The gaming alone is not going to support the quality of life that we want to have for our tribal members and for the members of our local communities. So we had to create new streams of revenue for the tribe so that the tribe can continue to do their mission. And when we knew we had to make big moves, we knew we wanted to make big moves. And so it really boiled down to how do we take what we've done in the past, and which was really pretty much riddled with lots of failure. As a company, we had tried kind of weird things in retrospect. I'll give you some examples. Bottled water, wind energy, really passive development. And all of that stuff was really just not aligned with who we were as a company. So when we had the opportunity to sort of hit the reset button on our non-gaming activity, we really wanted to zero in on things that we were more capable of doing, things that we were good at, and things where we knew we could bring value and bring passion to the table. And the hospitality industry is just a perfect fit from that standpoint. We'd been running casinos for over 2 decades at that time. We'd welcomed 5 million-plus visitors a year to our casinos, restaurants, and hotels that were associated with Grand Casino. So we really had high confidence in what we could do in the non-gaming hospitality world, and that's what drove and still drives today our external to gaming investments into hospitality. So, and that first big one that you mentioned, Tina, was in, you know, the city of St. Paul here in Minnesota. It's the capital city.
Mm-hmm.
Took down 2 big hotels, own half of the room inventory in the entire city. And that was a really cool moment for us, not only because the deal dynamics were good, we got the properties at a really low basis, but also just the fact that an Indian tribe owns half of the capital city was a pretty proud moment for the company and for the tribe. And we've been able to turn those properties into something pretty special. The one property that we bought was at the time we purchased it was a Crown Plaza right in downtown St. Paul, and we've renovated the entire property from soup to nuts and turned it into an intercontinental hotel.
Wow.
And we were just rated in the past, back in the past few months, we were just rated one of the top 10 intercontinental hotels in the entire portfolio across the world. And
wow,
it's just a pretty cool thing for us. And it's been a great revenue stream for the tribe, and a great way for us to really diversify alongside gaming.
Yeah, it's just a perfect fit. And you know what? What you said before about the bottled water, the wind energy, I think that's the key, is to find a fit, something that you're already good at, and it's an extension, right? Investments that are kind of like an extension where you know more about what you're doing. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think that's the key. I mean, people that will listen to this and people across Indian country know that we're in a very cash-rich industry when you talk about gaming. So we're not the only ones that know that. Everybody knows that. So we end up, typically, the deal flow that you see in Indian country is, it's a lot of people that's their primary interest, is to figure out how they can convince you to open up your pocketbook for their benefit, whether or not the tribe can actually add any value to the business ventures that they're pushing. And you know, you see them. Developing the next biofuel or something like that. And the reality of that is that most Indian tribes aren't going to have any expertise or anything to bring to the table when it comes to doing those sorts of things. So our strategy was really, what do we do well? What do we love to do? And what are we going to bring value to? And those are really the things we focus on. And having that investment criteria so that everybody knows what we're interested in and everybody knows what we're willing to do and capable of doing. It helps guide us as a company. It helps guide the tribe so the tribe knows what we're working on. And it also helps guide the business community. So if you, you don't bring anything to the table that we'll just tell you right away whether or not we're interested in it or not.
Yeah, because it's not just about the money, right? You can't just invest the money and it doesn't get overseen or you don't have any expertise on it. That's what you're saying, right? You see a lot of native investments that are just passive investments. They can't really bring anything to the table other than the checkbook, right?
Right. And I think there's room. There's certainly room for that type of investing. But in general, you know, I think having the ability to add value to an investment is really what the key is.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. It's very, very smart and very shrewd. It's great. And what an accomplishment to be able to be in that city and have, that being done by a Native Nation. It's just an incredible accomplishment. Congratulations. Where do you see the young generation now when you look around, your generation? What do you see around you and as a leader and a man who's done a lot and has a vision and has been educated, what is the mentorship of those people and where are we going into the future?
I think for my generation, I'm an old millennial, so I'm 35. I'm like right at the cusp. I think we get a little bit of a bad rap, but I think what I see is a lot of talented, hungry, passionate people that are knocking on the C-suite door, and I think I'm lucky that I am a part of and work for a tribe that is willing to give my generation a shot at sitting in that C-suite and even sitting on top of that C-suite to really get something done for my company. But I see it all over the place. I know there's a lot of folks out there that are ready for the baby boomers to ride off into the sunset. And they're ready to take their chance. You know, we just had a young fella at our conference from the Meskwaki Casino, and I mean, his name is Dirk Whitebreast. And you know, I listened to him talk, and I thought, you know, that's it right there. That's Indian country. That's the future of Indian country right there. It's a young man or a young woman that is or has been knocking at that C-suite and is ready to really make their mark on the industry. And I have just a lot of confidence and excitement around seeing more and more of those folks running gaming organizations and starting and innovating in the non-gaming part of what we need to do as Indian tribes as well.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty exciting, the trends, because now finally the generations in the future, they have the tools. And so with those tools and everything that's been created, the big ideas can be accommodated, correct?
Yeah, and at some point you just have to have confidence in those folks. Like we're getting to a point in the industry where the old ways don't matter and aren't very effective. So every tribe is going to be looking for innovative thought. And what I'm seeing and what I'm enjoying seeing is that the tribes are no longer looking outside of their community or outside of Indian country to find that. They're looking inside with the talent and those folks that are right in front of their face that hopefully they've been investing in over the course of this explosive growth in our industry over the last couple of decades. I mean, the tribes, I wouldn't be here if the tribe didn't invest the educational dollars and the things that they invested in me. And I'm not, we're not the only tribe doing that. Every tribe's doing that. And now I think we're getting to a point where it's like, okay, now all the money you invested in those folks, guess what? They're ready. You just have to give them the opportunity to take the show to the next level.
It's a long-term vision. You know, not just 10, 20, 30, 50 years, but even 100. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's a long-term vision. Yeah, I think so. It's, yeah. There are issues that we have in our communities and opportunities we have in our communities that are not, they're not things that are going to happen over the course of a year. You know, they're not things that are going to happen over the course of a decade. They're generational opportunities, and also there's generational issues that we're going to deal with too as Indian people.
What a great story, and what an inspiring story. It's really, really something. I'm going to open it up to some questions here. So let's see who we got here. Okay. Hello, hello. Welcome to GT Radio.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You have a question for Joe?
Hi, Joe. Great interview so far. Really, really enjoyed it. I have a question on how come other tribes haven't followed your lead, at least just to the level that you have in terms of diversification, in terms of, you know, getting into other businesses, and what needs to happen to have, you know, other tribes kind of follow your lead?
Sure. That's a great, great question. And I think one of the things that makes our situation unique is the fact that we're not doing it purely as a want. We're doing it as a necessity. I mean, our gaming market has slowed down to the point where we've kind of been propelled and pushed into the deep end of the pool, if you will. I think there are a lot of other tribes. I mean, that are right on the cusp of doing big things in non-gaming. You know, I know the Ho-Chunk tribe in Wisconsin is really building a very innovative company. There, we just met with the Pechanga tribe this week, and they have some very exciting stuff. We have the Shakopee, Mitawakan, Tansu, our innovators here in this market that are doing a lot of great things external to gaming. So I think we'll see that more and more. The Potawatomi, the PBDC in Wisconsin, they're very innovative. The Potawatomis in Michigan, doing some great external investing that's not just simply the traditional job creation stuff in the community, but actual capital development strategy. So I think we're starting to see it in different places. And I think as gaming continues to mature across the country and continues to mature for different tribes, it won't simply be a desire, it'll be a necessity, and I think that's when we'll start to see it pick up. I think the other component of that is really building the human capital capacity to do so. So I think the time is probably now to really identify who the resources are that are going to lead these efforts. And I think that's probably one of the other bigger differences for the Mille Lacs band is that the investment in that was made quite early, and the expectation to have that sort of talent running the businesses was an investment they made early. And I think other tribes are making that, and those investments are going to start paying off in the next very immediate future. So I think it's coming. I think it is. It's happening. We're just not hearing about it yet. But there's a lot of stuff that's bubbling up and ready to blow.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff. Thank you very much.
Okay, yeah, thank you, man. Good question.
Hello, GG Radio. Do you have a question for Joe?
Hi, Dino. It's Rich. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Good. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good.
Good. So my question is this. You know, you're a relatively young adult there, male. How, you know, growing up and becoming, you know, in the position you are, what's, you know, have there been any letdowns or disappointments in your career so far, and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the big failures and turning points in my life was actually being fired from this company once. We had a CEO. I was the corporate VP of marketing at the time, and we had a CEO here that I didn't see. You know, the two of us just didn't see eye to eye, and he took his opportunity to set me in my place, and that was probably the most important thing that ever happened in my career. I mean, it forced me to rethink how I could add value to the company. It also forced me and really inspired me to go on and shore up some of the weaknesses that I had. That's what propelled me to get my MBA and really, instead of being just a marketing guy, to go out and obtain skills in finance and skills in accounting and skills in strategy development. So I think I really just kind of took that failure and that opportunity to make myself better. I mean, I could have pouted around. I could have ran to the tribe and cried to the chief executive about how I was wronged. But I didn't do that. I refocused myself and put some energy into making myself better. And I think I'm really happy that happened. So I think that's probably the biggest one I would point to as far as kind of bumps along the way.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Great, yeah, that's.
Sorry, Rich. We cut you off. What did you say?
No, that's perfect. And I guess my other quick question would be, and do the elders, are giving you the leeway to make some of these important decisions now, or do they still want to play a major role in, you know, decisions going forward for, let's say, the next 10, 20 years? Or are they feeling comfortable in handing over the reins to a younger generation?
Yeah, I think there's a really strong comfort level that our elders have for the generation. I think there's a lot of pride. They know that they're a part of our success. They know that it's really their vision for us that has us producing at the level we are. I know there's another young man that I graduated with. He's also the commissioner of our Department of Natural Resources. So, and I tell you that the elders are super proud of that, because we're a production of their desire and their vision to have folks doing what we're doing even at our age. So that's been a real positive thing, and I think there's confidence there. At the same time, we're also a community, and culturally we believe in and value the voice of our elders. So even if they want or quote-unquote are okay with us running forward, you know, it's probably not something we would typically do. We still really seek and value the guidance that they provide. So.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Great stuff. All right, let's see what else we have here. Hello, GT Radio. Do you have a question for Joe?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great.
Good.
Good to hear.
Good, we got a
I just
woman
have
on
one
the line.
Quick question, and it has to do with women, yes. How do you see the Native women's role in the future?
So I think it's paramount. I mean, the two last chief executives, so the last two decades of our tribe have been, our chief has been a woman. So the great Marge Anderson and right now Chief Melanie Benjamin, and the secretary treasurer of our tribe, Carolyn Bolio, also a very influential woman in our tribe and in our and in Indian country. So I think it's very valuable. Our team is comprised mostly of women. We have a very talented CFO, Rhonda Weisnegger, who's a tribal member and a woman. So we value that heavily, and I think from my perspective, I think it's very valuable. The perspective is always good. It balances there. I think there it balances and advances the debates that we have. I think especially on the casino side of our business, it's important because the majority of our customer base are women, and the majority of our revenue comes from women. So having a perspective on how to orient our experience around women is very, very important. So I think it's very important. I think we typically start with how talented somebody is. We don't really start in on right away on what somebody's gender is. If you're talented and you can produce, that's something that we value. But certainly, women definitely contribute heavily to what we do as a company. And I think that's going to go.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll go forward in the Indian country.
Joe, that's a good question, and also. It's not your diversity in terms of that is not the norm, correct? I mean, we all know that the gaming business is very male dominant. Where does this come from? The acceptance of having females in powerful roles, because I think it's very, very unique and very, very good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's 2017, and we're not in the Donald Trump days of boardrooms need to be all men, and I'd probably upset my fellow male colleagues that are on my team, but the big innovation and big risks normally come from the women on our teams And I don't know if I just have a weird perspective on that because I don't know. I never really think about gender is really not front and center for me. It's really about talent and your brain power I don't know if there's a difference commercial gaming versus Indian gaming, but I mean in Indian gaming certainly we have a vast respect for our women.
Yeah, and it's a good thing because like you said, performance is performance. It has nothing to do with gender, and that's that makes for good business right across the board.
Yep.
What else we got here? Hang on one sec. Hello, GT Radio. Do you have a question for Joe?
Yeah, hey there, Joe. Great interview. I'm really enjoying this.
Thanks.
Listen, I wanted to get your thinking. To get with the future generations to integrate outside of the res, you know, do you see, you know, going into the bigger cities or maybe even a Native American running a large American corporation? You know, how do you see that happening?
I do see that happening. I think it's gonna if you think about it, the last couple of decades and what Indian gaming has done is it's really created this its first generation wealth. So I think we're in this process of figuring out how to live with and how to manage first generation wealth. And I think typically we're kind of moving into this next era of the figuring out the sophistication level that you have in order to not only manage all of that wealth, but how do you grow it and how do you grow it properly? And I think that's really the key right now is it's what are tribes going to do now to diversify in conjunction with gaming? What are they doing with their long-term portfolio? And I think as we build the just like we had to build in the past two decades, we've invested in and built the skill set for folks to run and manage casinos at a high level. Then this next generation and what's happening right now is we're teaching folks and investing in folks to manage money, invest money, and I think that's as we build that skill set in Indian country, I think that's where you're going to find the dynamos that are willing to and prepared to run a large, you know, Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 company. So I think the skill sets are going to catch up in order to manage your own tribe's money, and then after that, that skill set will easily transfer over into kind of a bigger company. So I think that skill set's coming, I guess, which would be my answer to that.
Yeah, good. I like how you say a skill set. That's pretty much what it is. And it's nothing like learning, from the very beginnings, you know, on the tribe and the reservation, just everything that comes along with that.
Right. Yeah, and as soon as we can... You know, there are things that this first generation wealth has brought to us where we have non-Indians probably managing large chunks of our money or that are maybe making big decisions on behalf of tribes. And that's the same way gaming started in the early 90s. You know, we had Grand Casino Inc. that was making the decisions on how we ran our casino. But it didn't take us long to invest in our folks and gain the capability of doing it ourselves. And I think that's what's happening in the more sophisticated side of what we have to do now, which is the investing side, the diversification side, and that's kind of the era we're in. That's the exciting stuff right now that I think is really going to change things.
Great question. Thank you very much. So, Joe, I had dinner with a good friend of yours last night, Michael Michaud, and he added another thing to your list of accomplishments. He said you just finished running your first marathon. Is that correct?
Yeah. I tackled the New York Marathon last year. So
that's amazing. So how did that come about, and how does that feel?
It's just on a whim. Actually, it's Michael Michaud's fault. Actually, he convinced me to start running half marathons. And once I got into that mode, I decided I should tackle the big one. So, And I just fell in love with it. It's a great hobby, and I love it.
That's great, and I love the way you say that. Just on a whim, just to run the marathon, and that spirit has got to carry over and be heard by everybody, because it's the spirit that's going to move everything forward. And like you said, you know, these are the skill sets that you're building now for the future generations that, you know, when they could run Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 companies. And that's a pretty clear vision. It's on the horizon.
Yeah, definitely. I certainly believe that.
Well, Joe, it was great having you on the show. Thank you so much. You're a very inspiring person. And I want to have you back on the show in the future. And I hope to see you very soon. And thank you so much for sharing everything that you shared with us today.
Cool, man. Thank you so much, too, for the invite. It's fun.
Great, Joe. Take care. Have a good day, and God bless.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. That was pretty amazing. Joe's an amazing person. Loved the stories and about evolution and the next generation and just building the skill sets. He's just a very, very, very inspiring person. Next week I have Steve Neely, a good friend of mine. He's the CEO of Casino del Sol. He's worked at a lot of native casinos, but he's also a very interesting man and a great, great person. And so join us next week and we'll have Steve Neely, CEO of Casino del Sol. Thank you for listening, everybody, and hope you're having a great day. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell, and please listen to their story. Thank you. Have a great night. Bye-bye.